Welcome to another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast, a production of the Criminal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School in Charlottesville, Virginia. Every 2 weeks, we release a new episode. Today, we're going to have a conversation about a recent opinion from the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. Please note that these episodes may contain facts and circumstances surrounding criminal trials. Listener discretion is advised.
All right. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable United States Court of Appeals of the Armed Forces is now open and in session. God save the United States of America in this honorable court.
Welcome back to another episode of CAF Chats. I'm Major Altimus, and today I'm joined again by Lieutenant Colonel Michael Scaletti. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Today we're looking at a recent CAF decision, United States v. Casillas, decided in August 2025. This case is about sexual assault without consent, charged under Article 120 of the UCMJ, and it touches on some hot-button issues. The constitutionality of Article 120b2a, sufficiency of evidence, voir dire basis challenge, and even firearms restrictions after convictions. Lots to unpack here. Sir, we get started on the facts?
Yeah, let's get started with the facts then. So the victim, Airman First Class SF, threw a party at her apartment. She invited another airman who invited Casillas throughout the party. The victim became intoxicated. After most folks left, the victim went to bed. She was intoxicated and tired. One of the quotes there was super woozy. And then after everybody left, Casillas was still at the house. When the victim's friend returned, he asked if she was okay with Casillas being there, which she kind of sort of answered by like mumbling something with some type of affirmative response. So it was like, yeah, you can stay, sure, whatever. But it seemed like she wasn't really responsive. So there's a lot of different players in the facts. We've got SF, who's the victim. You have ZM, you have HC, you have appellant, you have MM. So it's like the super woozy, kind of feel a little woozy after reading all of the different letters.
Yes, sir. But I think regardless of their initials, what we have here is Casillas stays at the after the party when everyone else leaves. When the victim's friend returns, he asks Casillas how long you're going to be there, and he says he's leaving soon. That does not happen, does it, sir?
No. So he doesn't leave, and then so essentially what happens is the victim is asleep, or apparently asleep, and then the appellant goes in, Casillas goes in and begins having sex with her. She awakes to him, which is an important fact for Casillas because this is what tells us it's not Mendoza. And then she manifests some level of non-consent and stops. And then the weirdest fact is that he then pulls up her pants and she goes to the bathroom.
Right. And I think it's important, too, is that she goes to bed that night in bed with another friend. So the other friend is already in her bed and she goes in with that friend. When she wakes up sometime later, that friend is gone and Casillas is penetrating her vaginally with his penis. And then there's some conscious of guilt stuff where Casillas then pulls her pants up and then he slinks off into the bathroom before she's able to call friends who come and physically remove him from the house.
Right. And the calling of friends, I think, is also important because so you have consciousness of guilt, but you also have consciousness of victimization. So she's calling this friend like, I didn't mean for this to happen. I need you to get this guy out of here, kind of a thing.
And normally, these facts are important, but not super important. But we are going into depth in them because it goes into one of the decisions that CAF talked about with the totality of the circumstances. So that's why we're going and spending some time on the facts in this case. Sir, what's the procedural history of Casillas?
Okay, so Casillas was charged under Article 120 of the UCMJ with two specifications of sex assault, one for penile penetration, one for digital penetrations, but both under the theory of without consent. So at a panel, a general court martial convicted him of penile penetration specification, but acquitted him of the digital penetration. He was sentenced to 2 years confinement, reduced to E1, forfeited all pay and allowances, and a dishonorable discharge. The Air Force CCA affirmed his conviction, and then Casillas appealed to CAF, raising the constitutional evidentiary and some procedural issues.
Yes, sir. I think there's a total of six issues, some that are more important than others, but I do think it's interesting that they granted on all issues and denied all. But we're going to run through these quickly and then we'll break them out. But first, the appellant raised whether Article 120b2a, which is sexual assault without consent, is unconstitutionally vague. then whether the statute, Article 120B2A, was applied unconstitutionally in his case, whether the evidence was legally sufficient, as in was that Casillas argued that the evidence presented at trial was insufficient to prove sex assault beyond a reasonable doubt, whether the judge erred in keeping a panel member whose wife had been raped 30 years earlier, whether the judge should have given a special instruction about intoxication and consent, and finally, whether the federal firearms ban under Section 18 U.S.C. 922 is constitutional as applied to Casillas. So, sir, was CAF buying any of these arguments?
Definitely not. Yeah, so they give all six issues. The first three issues are the ones that are really interesting, especially for criminal law nerds like us, because, we're going to talk a little bit about how it plays off of Mendoza. They're definitely not buying the arguments. The CAF did take some time in the constitutional issues to discuss Mendoza and clarify with some pretty concise statements about what that holding was. Essentially, that there are distinct offenses and that you can't charge one theory and then offer evidence of a different theory and get your conviction.
And here it leaned on its Mendoza decision, which clarified that 120 Bravo 2A without consent and 120 B3 incapacitation are two separate theories and they cannot be used interchangeably, correct?
Right. And then in Casillas, what we have here too is we also have the third different modality, which is asleep. So we're getting into that one as well.
And here, different than Mendoza, the victim woke up during the act. So based on her testimony that she woke up and Casillas was already penetrating her, one can assume that he started penetrating her when she was asleep. And that would be a different modality.
That would be a different charge, yeah. So, and there's a little bit of discussion, and I don't focus on it too much, but the idea is that, hey, look, we've got evidence of non-consent. Not that that's necessarily required, but we have that manifestation there, and it was in a state where she was capable of consenting and did not. So that's where they point out a clear distinction between the facts in Casillas and the facts in Mendoza.
And they find that it is constitutional, as there's no vagueness problem here because it was properly applied. The facts presented at case that she woke up, did not consent, meet the statutory schema that they charged it with, correct?
Correct. Yeah. So the phrase that I highlighted in the opinion was the government, so they, when they charged them with without consent, it was, quote, exactly the offense and factual theory the government charged, giving appellant sufficient notice of what needed to be defended against. So that's where we get interesting because, you know, we've got a recent grant for Mendoza to go back to CAF after ACCA spent some time with it again. So this is going to be like part four. So it's like we're pushing Fast and Furious numbers here. So it's going to be I don't have a crystal ball, but my guess is it's going to be heavily focused on the notice issue and due process.
And here, Casillas was charged with without consent, and then the evidence that put on was that she was awake and did not consent.
Right, exactly. And so that's probably, we'll get into our takeaways later, but that's probably the biggest takeaway is to read your and understand your facts and charge appropriate.
Yes, sir. And then they talk next about sufficiency. The court emphasized that the victim's testimony established that she was awake, aware, and non-consenting during part of the penetration, which, as we know, is enough for a rational fact finder to convict.
Correct.
So there was no issue with the evidence and the sufficiency of the conviction.
Right. And they did get into a little bit in their legal sufficiency analysis. They got in a little bit about how the government couldn't just offer, hey, she was asleep, so now she didn't consent. So that can't be the sole piece of evidence they rely on for lack of consent.
And which is what they argued, which they found in Mendoza. They said you can't use the fact that she was too incapacitated to consent to be the only evidence that she did not consent.
Exactly. Which is why we're all waiting with bated breath for the next one.
Yes, sir. So let's talk about the voir dire. So here we have a panel member who disclosed during, I believe, general and then individual voir dire that his wife had been raped 3 decades earlier. The defense challenged for bias, but the judge found the member credible and impartial. What is interesting about this voir dire here?
What's interesting is that we're reading about it, I think, first of all. Because it seemed fairly straightforward. There was some rehabilitation done. I think what's interesting is the judge did the rehabilitation, which happens pretty frequently in trial. But CAF talked about the differing versions of appellate review that can be applied. And essentially what they say is the more reasoning that the judge puts on the record, the more deference they get.
Yes, sir. And I was going to say, they talk a lot about actual bias, but not so much implied. And there really isn't any discussion about the liberal grant mandate. Under the actual bias, the judge found the responses of the panel member to be credible and impartial. And I found it interesting, and I highlighted it here, that he had the panel member himself explain in his own words why he believed that he could be impartial. And the court cites that exact statement, which I think they put a lot of deference in his own words, not just counsel or the court summarizing what he said and why he is impartial.
Yeah, and I also think another reason why we're reading about it is because CAF does get into, hey, look, there are some more factors that you can consider when you're getting into a challenge, whether it's implied or actual bias. And in this case, they were talking about, hey, look, this wasn't like we didn't get into the facts of what exactly happened to this panel member's spouse. Was it particularly egregious? Is there similarities between it and this case? They didn't get into any of that. Instead, they said this was a long time ago, and, you know, I have the ability to evaluate this evidence.
And I think we're going to do, our takeaways are going to be mostly on the Mendoza and the charging issue. But I think we could hit a little bit of the voir dire stuff here, because if I am government, I am probably not fighting this fight. I am probably not trying to rehabilitate,
right?
Because this worked well, because I think what the judge did. But normally we see this being overturned very easily, and then you've lost at voir dire. But what did the judge do here differently that kind of saved it?
Well, I think what he did different was he asked him, I mean, we talked about it already, but he asked him in his own words, like, how are you going to be able to evaluate the evidence in this case? And then he put on the record about the body language, you know, the demeanor of the panel member when he's answering the questions. And then that's what really gets him all of that deference that CAF gives him. And they're doing this because they want to encourage other judges to do the exact same thing.
But if you're defense, what could you have done more to kind of make it? Because CAF does talk about, hey, we have no facts of what actually happened to, whether it's egregious, whether it's super, because he says they talked about it a few times in the 30 years since it's happened. But maybe those talks were particularly important, but we never get any of the details. And so if you're defense, what's your takeaway?
Well, if you're defense and you've got a particular panel member that kind of raises your spidey senses and you want to get them off the panel, you've got to use voir dire to establish those facts. Draw parallels between what happened to them and the current case. See if you can get some type of impassioned response. You want to be able to establish, hey, look, this guy may be telling you that he can make these distinctions, but deep down inside, he can't.
Yes, sir. All right, sir, let's move on to the panel instruction issue. What was the defense asking for here?
So the defense is asking for specific instruction about the use of alcohol. And it's interesting because as I read it, I think that they probably would have got the instruction had it not been for the last sentence of what they were asking for, which is, quote, in this case, there was no allegation that the victim was too intoxicated to consent to sex. You are not permitted to consider whether she was too intoxicated to consent. And CAF focuses on that particular sentence as the reason why, like, hey, it wasn't abuse of discretion to not do this, because that's a misstatement of the law. They get into how you can consider intoxication as evidence of lack of consent, but you can't be the sole reason.
And I think here, if in the new just published military judges bench book, they have a Mendoza kind of instruction where they talk about this case has not been charged under an incapacitation. While intoxication can be used as part of the surrounding circumstances in evaluating consent, it cannot be because she was intoxicated, she did not consent, right? It still has to be that capability part. But I think the judge's bench book is contemplating this specialized instruction, but not then creating the misstatement of the law that intoxication can never be relevant in a without consent case.
Right, exactly. And ACCA, in both their newest Mendoza decision and their newest Coe decision, which you have to clarify because there are so many of them, they specifically pull out a piece of the CAF Mendoza opinion that says, to be clear, having separate theories of liability under 120 does not bar the trier of fact from considering evidence of the victim's intoxication when determining whether they consented. So this instruction that the council was asking for in Casillas is directly contrary to the holding of Mendoza.
Right. And so I think takeaway is the court sees the intoxication as a part of the total circumstances. And so CAF is saying this is going to be relevant. So for the practitioners in the field, intoxication, even if you charge it under a without consent, does not disappear. As we know in our practice, a lot of our sexual assault allegations surround alcohol, whether or not they're an incapacitation case. But alcohol is a part of the surrounding circumstances. And so CAF is finding that to be relevant and part of the total circumstances of establishing or evaluating the alleged victim's consent. However, it can't be in the absence of any other evidence of without consent, cannot just be the intoxication. As Mendoza said, and then I think in Casillas, CAF says it even more clearly.
Right. I think so. And I think another practice point here is when using instructions, don't try to go too far. Like, I think that is particularly in this one, the rest of the instruction they were asking for has to do with like bad, sharp training and things like that, where you're like, oh, you may have been told at some point that having a drink of alcohol means you can't consent to sex at all. That's probably worth asking for. Mm-hmm. And I think that the practitioners in the field should continue to ask for specific instructions, but don't try to go too far. That last sentence, that really put them in jeopardy.
If you're going to ask for an instruction, it needs to state the law correctly. That's the first prong. And they're going to look at the judge's denial of a specialized proposed instruction under an abuse of discretion. And if it's not correct law, you're not going to get it. So I think if looking at the military bench book, looking at the proposed tailored instruction and then going from there is a good place to start. In fairness to our Air Force practitioners, that bench book instruction just got released this year. So they did not have this when they argued Casillas. This is a result, I think, of that.
Yeah, this is definitely a developing area of the law. It's coming out faster than the new MCMs.
Yes, sir. And finally, the firearms issue. I think CAF is finding that they don't have jurisdiction to change the entry of judgment at this point. And so the issue's moot. And so they're not going to do it. They're not going to block check. They're not going to take the block check away. So this is a kind of a throwaway, and this just affirms that they're not going to touch that block.
Right. I read this as, for the love of goodness, please stop asking us to do this.
Yes, sir. So we kind of talked through these issues. I think we all kind of were waiting for Casillas to see what it did. I think Casillas is an easier to digest understanding of what the court was trying to say or did say in Mendoza. I think I walked away being, all right, we know without consent is different than an incapacitation. We know that we cannot circumvent the mens rea element of incapacitation cases just by saying they were too incapacitated, therefore they did not consent under a without consent theory. But what I think the takeaway for the, it seems pretty obvious. However, we're seeing a lot more of this. And I think they could have charged both without sleep, when the person was asleep and without consent, and been okay in that because the penetration occurred while the person was still sleeping. But I think it's very clearly a without consent case. She woke up, she was aware, she was able to testify to that, which is so, so different than what the evidence was and what the charge was in Mendoza.
Right, exactly. And, you know, you and I have talked about this extensively around our conference table. If you're a prosecutor and you're evaluating what to charge, know your facts and then charge it with the facts in mind.
They're drawing the sharp lines between without consent and incapacitated. And I think this case highlights that sharp line. She was drunk or intoxicated, right? We don't know that she was incapacitated. She fell asleep and woke up to the penetration, was able to describe that, able to express some sort of non-consent to the point where he pulled up her pants, which I think is why we go back to why all these facts are super important here, because you have the, she fell asleep with someone else in the bed, not him. She wanted him to leave. She barely acknowledged that he was going to stay, and he told people he was leaving in 30 minutes. And then you have that after-the-fact effect of him pulling up her pants and then her immediately calling her friends, all going to without consent.
Right, exactly. And you have something that's completely different than Mendoza, for example, which is, I don't remember. Then you have this black hole that you have to fill in. And usually you're using the accused statements or that are influenced by CAD and things like that. I think it's also interesting in this case, the big difference is that, hey, defense didn't have to adjust fire based on the notice of what they had. So In Mendoza, the defense team had to adjust because the elements were different. And they didn't offer much in the way of, hey, she didn't want this because that came clearly through in the government's argument. And when you reread Mendoza, CAF focuses heavily on the presentation of the evidence rather than the evidence itself, which is why I think ACCA thought, you know, they had enough wiggle room to get back to legal sufficiency.
I think walking away from Casillas, your Article 120 prosecutions must mask the specific charge theory. But when the victims are awake and non-consenting, the law applies clearly. It's without consent. And I think intoxication is going to continue to remain relevant within the confines of the law, not just whatever instruction. It cannot not be relevant. It is part of the offense. And that's what CAF says clearly. But now we still are left with this question mark, sir. Where are we in the world of Mendoza 0.75, whatever number we're on now?
Yeah, so it, you know, Mendoza is going back to CAF. I would anticipate that Coe goes back to CAF. They're all very similar issues. I think that CAF is going to give us some clarification on the due process piece of this. When you're talking about like Mendoza, when we were earlier when we mentioned that the defense would have had a different approach, there's a whole additional element. That element changes the way that you would present a mistake of fact defense, whether it's a mistake of fact about the intoxication and or capacity of the victim versus mistake of fact as to consent itself. And then, you know, you get to a point where you've got battle of experts, you're talking about moving, speaking, all these different things, and it completely changes the nature of the case, which is why I think that they're going to get to that due process question in Mendoza 2 or Mendoza 17, whatever it is, and we might get a little bit of clarity on it.
Because I think the ACCA of Mendoza, the most recent one that was certified by TJAG to CAF, they don't answer the question of what they actually use to find legal and factual sufficiency in terms of the evidence that was presented at that trial. And I think what we're looking for is what is enough? What evidence are they presenting to show that it is without consent? And because I think Mendoza and the facts there are so different than here, that this is a good case to kind of foreshadow what we could potentially see in a CAF decision number 3 in Mendoza.
Right, I think so too. And, you know, this has been a long episode, but I think it's a really fascinating area of the law right now, and I think that it's ripe for discussion. So I'm glad we were able to have the conversation.
Yes, sir. And to the field, be on the lookout for see what CAF does with Mendoza again. And that is another episode of CAF Chat. Sir, thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time.
Thanks for joining us today for another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast. If anything you heard sparked a thought, we'd love to connect with you. Your comments help us create better future content for the field or the fleet. Reach out to us on Facebook or Instagram. The information can be found in the show notes for today's episode. The views expressed in today's podcast are those of the presenters and not necessarily the Judge Advocate General, the Department of the Army, or the Department of Defense.
Thanks, counsel, for both sides. And the court will stand in recess until further order of the court.